Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Good day to you, podcats. How are you? I am speaking to you with a very well-slept voice today. Do I sound different? Maybe a little bit different. I had a really good, solid 8-hour sleep just now. Why, you may ask yourself. It is because I'm not home, I tell you. I speak to you from Manchester. It's so bizarre. I've had a night away for work. Yesterday when I left the house, I felt terrible leaving the Smalls and Richard. I've been home, you know, obviously every night with them. And this is the first night I've had away from my family for months and months and months. But I have to say, and they won't hear this, that waking up after a good sleep has reduced that anguish I felt at leaving them to a dim and distant memory. And now I'm just thinking, this bed is comfy. And it was nice to have proper blackout curtains and silence. Don't worry, I will be back tonight. I go back home. I'm up here filming something for Alan Carr's Epic Game Show. I'm not a contestant. I'm someone that's assisting in the show itself. You'll see what I mean when it's on telly. I don't know if I'm allowed to speak about it. Don't tell anyone I told you, even what I told you. I came up yesterday to film and I'm back home tonight and I don't get in till about 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe 1:30, because it's a long journey home and I don't finish till late up here. So don't worry, I'll be back to that sort of slightly sleep-deprived state that I usually inhabit by this time tomorrow. What else can I tell you? We've got our final kitchen disco this Friday. I've been planning the playlist. I say this Friday, I mean tomorrow. I'm talking to you from way back in the past. It's Thursday where I am. And I've been planning what songs to do. I've asked people online to help me with what songs they want because it was actually really hard to set up a poll for all my songs so people could vote, but also for people to suggest covers. So this morning, I've got nothing on. I'm not working today till this afternoon, and I've decided my task is to sit down and write out all the songs people have said and then tally them up. So wish me luck with that. And with the covers, I think I know what I'm going to do. It's our last disco ever, potentially, given that there'll be no more lockdowns, potentially. So this is number 20, and I want it to be a good one. What else can I tell you? I had no Spinning Plates podcast go out on Monday. Maybe you noticed. Did you notice? It's because it was a bank holiday, and also because I had my first live Radio 2 show. I've done a couple of Radio 2 shows last year. They were all pre-records from home. And this was the first time I was live in the studio. And they let me drive the desk, which was cool. So I was doing my own fader for when I spoke. And I actually really enjoyed it. So if you listened in, thank you. And I loved all the messages and everything. Oh, that's been my week. That's broadly speaking my week. Oh, I've left out something super important. It's my birthday on Saturday. Sorry, I should probably preface that. I left out something super important. It was Richard's birthday on Tuesday. But it's my birthday on Saturday, April 10th. I know you all know that. And don't worry if you're hearing this now and thinking, oh, I missed it. You can still wish me a happy birthday. I accept happy birthday messages up to 2 weeks post my birthday with no judgment at all. So don't worry, there's still time. Anyway, this week's guest is such a lovely woman, Rebecca Vincent. So I've been following tattooist Rebecca for what feels like a couple of years now, I think. She tattooed a beautiful tattoo on Sally Hughes a couple of years ago. And so I started following Rebecca after that because I'm always a bit fascinated with tattoos and I've sort of toyed with the idea of a second one. I have one tattoo, a heart that says family on my right arm. But I used to think quite long and hard about having a second one, and Rebecca's designs were the sort of thing I was thinking of getting. She does these beautiful black and white botanicals primarily. So leaves, flowers, insects, bees, they are beautiful, really detailed, really clear, quite big, bold designs. I love them. And I realised that she had a child, which immediately makes me think, I could speak to her for my podcast. And I messaged her and she got back to me straight away. And so we met for the first time. We'd never met before and I'd never really spoken to her direct before, just liked a lot of her posts. But it turned out we had a couple of mutual friends, which was really sweet and an unexpected surprise. And she was completely lovely. She was a bartender, she ran a bar, a bar manager until she was in her mid-20s, furniture and baby, yada yada, life change, new job. And she speaks beautifully about her child's decision to be non-binary as well. It was a very recent thing when we spoke. I think her child had only been non-binary for a couple of weeks. So we do make a couple of mistakes, but I loved the fact that Rebecca was so open about talking about it. And thank you as well to her child as well for that that candid approach. But also I really appreciated the fact that Rebecca was saying, you know, if the intention is there to support and to love, then everybody is accepting the fact that, you know, those pronouns, we've been doing them for a long time. It takes a little while to get out of that habit. But she obviously has a very, very loving, supportive household with her husband and her 10-year-old. And I think it's a really good message for us all. And this extra sleep has made me talk to you for the longest I think I've ever spoken at the beginning of any of my podcasts. So you should probably be grateful that I don't normally get this much sleep. Just enjoy the podcast. It's nice to be back. I have this episode and then another couple, then there's the end of series 3. I'm already starting to talk to people for series 4. Happy days. Thanks for being here with me. And see you on the other side. Well, I guess we should probably, I mean, it's funny because when I first started doing the podcast stuff, it was all the beginning of lockdown. And I thought, I don't really want to have a podcast where we talk loads about lockdown.
Mm.
But now that it's been going on a year, it would kind of be odd to not mention it, particularly as it must have affected your day job pretty significantly.
100%, yeah. It was crazy. We were like I kind of took myself out the week before lockdown, actually, because I kind of saw that it was coming.
Mm.
But because we're in such close contact, it's inevitable that it was going to be, you know, not allowed.
So what does a tattoo artist do when they can't tattoo a client? So your husband and child covered now.
Do you know what? No, I haven't. Honestly, do you know what? I need to get him in before I actually start again to do a practice tattoo because it's going to be
The idea of that actually really amused me. Sorry, I haven't got anyone else to tattoo. Hold still.
Sorry, child. Sit down here.
It's my eyelid.
They really don't like that. I don't think they're going to get any, you know.
Really?
No, because it's not cool when your parents are tattooed.
It really isn't, is it?
No. And Lee and I are very tattooed. I mean, not that we're in competition, but if we were, I am actually more tattooed.
Really?
Yeah.
So I can only see, like, sort of a little bit of neck and a little bit of... But you're pretty covered, aren't
you? Yeah, I've got a kneecap left, which will stay undone because it's so painful.
Is that really the most painful place?
Yeah, no.
It's very thin, isn't it, on the bone?
I actually don't like getting tattooed anymore because I had this conversation with a guy at the shop this morning. When you book in for a tattoo, it's really exciting and you're paying for it and stuff, but when it's your job and you can literally get tattooed by your friends whenever, it's just it's
the novelty. Painful.
No, it's gone. The novelty's gone. And I'm older now and I'm like,
so no. That kneecap is just
staying. That's beautiful. Got a kneecap and a bum cheek left and they're both gonna stay. As a memory of my youth. Untattooed.
Just to reassure your mum, there's a little bit left from the beginning.
I tattoo her though.
Really?
Yeah, she's so supportive. Like, aww. And she doesn't. She looks like a beautiful, like 65-year-old woman. And yeah, she let me tattoo her arm as well.
Oh, wow,
I know.
That's very cool of her. It is. I like that. But also a little bit of pressure on you. I would have thought tattooing your mum.
Well, I mean, my sister, my husband, and my mum were kind of my first proper customers, and there's some awful. Now it's fine because it's like 9-10 years in. But I look back on that and I'm like, oh my god. I need to fix it.
Well, that's quite a funny one, isn't it? Because I guess when you get started, your work has a permanence, even if you end up evolving from that point.
Oh, my God. Totally.
And it's on a family member.
Totally.
They must love you very much.
Yes, they do. They love
if
me they very
are still
much.
Speaking to you.
No. Most of my mum's bad ones, I did her on her back anyway, so she can't see.
Looks great, mum.
just don't wear any low-cut tops, mum. You're fine. You're fine.
So when did you start tattooing? Was this all pre or before, like before or after you had your baby?
So when I had B, I was a pub landlady, and actually having them and having that job made me realise I couldn't really juggle the two. We used to live in above the pub. And my sister moved in with us when she was 15, 16. So it was just like a party, chaotic, really
fun. So this
was
you and your partner and your sister all living together.
Yep.
And then a baby on the way as well.
Yeah. Poor Lee. I was like, I just really want... I'm really close to my sister. Mm. Like, where there's 10 years between us. And I was the first one to hold her. She was born at home. Like, we're just like best friends. And she was having a really shit time.
Sorry.
I realised that. I was like, don't... She's having a really rubbish time, and we were really close, so she moved in with us. And Lee, we'd only kind of just got together, and Lee was like, I remember him saying, like, I don't care if she moves in, I just want to be with you, and if that means... And then he really regretted that, because she was a 16-year-old that moved in, and it was, yeah, I mean, they're very close now. They're very much like a brother and sister relationship. Yeah. But then I got pregnant, and we decided to find a house. And I went down to part-time, and then obviously just, you know, it's tiring when you have a baby, and then also kind of doing unsociable hours. And so I was thinking, right, okay, what do I want to do? And our friend Loda had come to visit us, to visit me with B, and because I'd already had tattoos. She was like, just become a tattoo artist. And I was like, no, you can't just become a tattoo artist. Like, that's just not how it works. But the more I thought about it, it kind of started making sense. I actually failed my A-level art when I was at college, and I hadn't drawn a thing between that point and after having B. And I had this kind of thing where I was just like, I just need to create something. I was like, you know, my husband's a musician. I can't do anything like that. And so I just started drawing again, and I just really fell in love with it. And I was kind of drawing how I used to draw.
Mm.
And it just shows you that, you know, you can't fail art. Like, that's such a ridiculous sentence. It's just ridiculous. And so I started drawing loads. Every time they would nap, I'd get my pen out and draw. And then completely coincidentally, this is in Leeds up the road, a studio opened up, and I just went in and was just like, I don't know, I had this like bravado of like, new mum, just like, give me a job. And they did. And then I became a tattoo artist.
Wow. I love what you said about you can't fail art. I mean that's such a simple thing to say, but when you say it, you think, of course. It sort of slaps you in the face a little bit.
It's subjective, isn't it?
It's completely subjective. Yeah. And I think sometimes as well, the creative arts, when they're put into an exam format, can really suck the joy out a little bit, actually.
Completely.
Because so much of it is about your emotional expression.
Totally.
So having to make it fit and exact of what someone else wants. I can see that there's a place for that.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't get me wrong, but they almost need to sort of parenthesis it slightly separately so that you don't lose your faith in your ability to still be able to create
100%.
Stuff.
100%. And I think if I'd gone specifically to an art school, that I would have been encouraged. Because my sister actually... I always say this to people when I can. She graduated Chelsea, like, the year before.
Ah.
And she, you know, she didn't have any GCSEs, didn't have any A-levels, and she just kind of found her... She's amazing. It's so interesting because we're both in creative jobs, but our styles and our kind of what we're into are just so different. And she was just kind of really encouraged at Leeds College of Art just to kind of explore what she wants to do. And it was really like, I was not envious, because that seems too much of a harsh word, but I was really like, wow, like, I wish I'd kind of gone down that route, but then maybe I wouldn't have found tattooing. Yeah. You know, so it's really, it's like chaos theory, isn't it? You kind of, it kind of leads you to where you are now.
Yeah, and also it's sometimes easier to be impressed with when you hear other people's stories. But for her, seeing you have your baby, stop the job you're in, and then walk into a tattoo place saying, I can do this, yeah, it's pretty inspiring too. So yeah.
Also, she used my portfolio for the apprentice job to go to Leeds College of Art and was like, oh, these are mine. So they let her in, and then she was like, right, I don't actually draw, I'm going to do like loads of installation work. And I love that so much. Like, the gall of it is amazing.
That really is. And so how old was your little one when you went into the tattoo parlour and started doing
so
that?
So they would have been about three. How old are they now? No, maybe they were two. I was 28 when I decided that I wanted to start tattooing, and I'm 37, so yeah, nine. So they would have been,
so you became a mum at about 25, 26?
Yes. And actually having them there with me from the start was like, it didn't change my life at all. It was just the next phase. Mm. And we were all kind of there together. So it's, you know, because it's, I'd imagine changing careers as a new mum, or having a career, then becoming a mum, and then trying to fit that around that. It's really hard for mothers in that respect. It was really difficult, but I was really fortunate in the fact that I decided to do it after they were here.
Yes, you never knew any other way to do it.
No. And then I got offered a job in London 9 months after I was tattooing, and then we've just been here since, which is exciting.
Well, why is it tattooing rather than just any other kind of art? You know, it could have been making prints or
it could
illustrations.
Have been.
But
you know what? I do that within the tattoo job as well. I think that's so, you know, you asked, like, what do I do? What do you do in a pandemic when you're a tattoo artist? And I started, I've got a Patreon as well, so I send out prints every month. I started doing like online drawing classes as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Which was so nice during the first lockdown. It was a really beautiful little community. And then I had this idea of getting other guest tattoo artists to host lessons. And through that met Jade Clark, who is, she's 10 years younger than me. No, she's 12 years younger than me. And she just has this passion and fire, and she's just turned it into this beautiful, like, worldwide, crazy art house wonderfulness, which has just been great. So that's kind of kept both of us busy.
This is like a new community, and it's called the Art 100%. House, isn't it?
Art,
like,
House Collective, yeah.
Art House Collective.
It's free art classes every week, different types of artists, all ages, and it has just turned into this, like, beautiful... Because we wanted to kind of... Initially, I was doing it to kind of get people together. And then mental health is something that's really important to both Jade and I. Mm. And it was kind of combating loneliness, especially in this time. And we have, I mean, we had 350 people on Sunday join the class, and it's all over the world, and they've all made friends with each other on social media. Mm. And they all encourage each other. It's really, really beautiful.
That is, and I think there's a lot of really positive things like that that have come out of the last 12 months. And I think I've definitely felt like the sort of connections I've made with people from all around the place. And I think when I used to use social media, I didn't necessarily engage that much with responses. So I'd put something out there, people put something in the comments, and I'd probably sort of just think, I don't think I'm supposed to acknowledge I've seen this.
Sort
of pretend you haven't.
Yeah.
But I think now I've actually, there's loads of people I follow now that I didn't know before.
Yeah.
And I love that community. And anyone that's sort of spreading a bit of joy, that's creating those online communities, that's creating stuff, I'm a bit obsessed with it already.
I think it's amazing. And you know, I'm probably wrong in this, but the majority of people I've seen doing this are, you know, women or in the queer community. And they're really kind of putting their own skills out there and wanting to create that space as well. And I agree, like, I hadn't really, you know, I'm really bad when it comes to social media. Like, I just post and that'd be it. But now, like, I've doing that engaging thing because you just want to talk to people. You miss people, you miss that interaction. Yeah. And it means so much to everybody. It means so much to me, you know. Mm. Seeing something so positive as well, it's really beautiful. But I saw loads of, like, loads of people, like, how to make cocktails or how to cook this or parenting tips or you know, it's literally everything. Mm. There's a chap I met weirdly through adopting our dogs. It's a long story, but we kind of somehow our lives came together that we had a brother and sister, and he is a gardener. I think he's worked, like, Gardener's Question Time and stuff, but through that he's been making videos on, like, how to, like, look after your gardens, how to do, like, vegetable patches, and people love it because they're at home more. It's great.
Yeah, and it's also quite gentle, and it's
definitely
inclusive. And actually what we were talking about before with the art thing, I think, I don't know if you watched any of that Grace and Perry's Art Club, but I really loved that because it was all about saying that, go back to what it is that just resonates in you when you make something, just for the pure joy of making something that didn't exist before. And I think that's just been a really simple thing that can just for a second elevate you out of where you are, or shift the perspective or the narrative of what's going on, which is something, a life skill you can take 100%. With you for whatever's going on. 100%. But obviously, this is the uniqueness, is we're all going through something very, you know, some of the themes are pretty universal, aren't they?
Definitely, and none of us have experienced this before, which is something you can take a little bit quite comforting, that you're kind of like, you're all in this together. But also, you're saying about just creating, like through the art house, we've had a couple of people change their careers completely and gone into a creative industry afterwards, and they wouldn't have thought to do that if this hadn't have happened. I'm just trying to take positives out of a really, I'm not taking away from a really difficult year, but I think it's important to kind of take positives out of it.
No, absolutely. I think that's, I don't think anyone is thumbs up for pandemics, but I do think that it's nice to acknowledge the nice things that come out of it. And I was talking to a friend yesterday actually, saying like little acts of kindness, little small things, they're really magnified to me at the moment. So all those little things, I've just thought they mean much more. They can kind of, even tiny little interactions, you're like, okay, I really, that's like, I get the beauty of that now.
Definitely.
A lot more.
And I think we took so much for granted. I did. Everybody did, because we were just so busy. And I think you're right. Like, you know, we said earlier, like the sun shining and the birds singing or whatever. Yeah. It's just like, it makes me so much happier, because you notice the season change a bit more, and we need this bit of sun.
Yes.
And I think, you know, just saying hello to somebody walking past on the street or whatever. Yeah. It's just, I think we need to kind of connect with each other, and I think we are, like, even here, like, I'm really good friends with my downstairs neighbors, I love them so much, but next door I'd said hello to a little bit, but not really. And now this whole bit, you know, it's, we're all talking to each other, and we've all lived next to each other for years, and I don't think that would have happened otherwise. And that's not because we're being rude, it's just because we're just busy, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. Do you think in the sort of tattoo community there was already a lot of that, you know, that if you were out and about and people have got tattoos, you think it does sometimes spark a bit of a conversation between people?
Oh, definitely. I think especially myself, and I know friends and colleagues, if you see a tattoo by somebody you know that's done that, you're like, oh my gosh, did so-and-so do that? And it's like, I mean, I'm a northerner, so I love a chat, and any excuse to kind of bring the chat to London, and Londoners, sometimes I don't like it, but you know, if I see a tattoo on somebody, I'm like, excuse me, and then
but that's fine. I never even thought of the fact you might recognize who's actually done the tattoo. Well, you've got a very distinctive style. I think your stuff is absolutely beautiful. So you deal mainly... I've only seen you doing black and white. Is that right? Do you do colour?
No, I don't. It's something that I only kind of... I started doing, and it just kind of carried on that way. Don't get me wrong. One day maybe I'll kind of move into that field, but I, for me it has to be a natural progression. I have actually been saying this for about 6 years. maybe I'll do a colour tattoo. I'm probably not. But yeah, I really love like music, for me, so like botanical museum artwork, like, oh my God, I love that so much. So that's kind of definitely where I get most of my influence from.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's very botanical. So it's lots of plants and bees and birds and roses, and it's absolutely beautiful. I think it's very distinctive. I definitely think I would recognise your work if I saw it on someone else.
Thank you so much.
But I want to know why it is that tattooing resonated with you. So you said you had some before you'd got into it for...
Yes.
The people.
I remember seeing a photograph... Oh gosh, I must have been about 19, and I saw a photograph of a woman and she was completely covered in tattoos. And I remember thinking, like, that was so brave and so amazing, and wow, I would never, ever be able to kind of have the kind of dare to do something like that. And I think now I'm actually probably more tattooed than that person, but it's something that I've always loved. And when I was younger, and still now obviously, was into like rock music or heavier music, and it was very popular amongst those communities. And then so I got a couple. I wish I could go back to myself when I get my first tattoo and be like, this is what you're going to do, because even just watching it being done, like, it's now it makes so much sense to me, but when you watch it, like, you know, it's it's so bizarre. And then, sorry, what was the question? I was
just why tattooing? Oh, really? Why resonated with you so much?
Well, yeah, so then it was kind of like an expression of yourself. Like, I had quite low self-esteem, I had very low self-esteem when I was a teenager, and just getting one tattoo, I remember getting this one on my wrist here, and there was nothing else around it, and just feeling like so much more confident. And I see that in the people I tattoo as well, no matter gender or age. You don't know people's insecurities, and sometimes people get something like, just if they don't like their arms or their leg, whatever, and just decorating it just makes you feel better about yourself. And that's definitely something that I got when I was getting tattoos. I just felt great. I know it's like maybe a vanity thing perhaps, but it just felt wonderful.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that, because when I was growing up, my dad was always very down on tattoos.
My
dad made it so easy to rebel because he just wore all the things he didn't like. He'd be like, no smoking, no tattoos. Yeah. So, you know, obviously as a teenager, I would smoke.
Of course.
And then when I was old, I went and got a tattoo. But he was always like, oh, people with tattoos, it just says, you know, that there's something about them. They, you know, I suppose it does link to the low self-esteem. You know, there's something about an insecurity there. But actually, it's funny because I was thinking about that on the way to see you and I thought, yeah, but what he didn't understand, well, certainly for me, is that by getting one, I felt empowered. Mm-hmm. And I love tattoos on other people. I love them. I've got loads of friends who've got beautiful tattoos. And I think I love the expression of it. So when someone comes to you and they've got an idea, if you think it's maybe not something that is quite right, but you've got an idea, how easy is it to sort of have that conversation evolving it?
So easy. It's like this. It's like this chat. Do you know what I mean? I would be so brutal. I would never tattoo something that I thought would not suit the person, because this is the thing, like, as amazing as tattoos are, they are forever, so you have to have that in your head, you know. Yes, they're so much more acceptable now, and which is wonderful because you can literally get whatever art style you like, but I felt at a time, there was a period of a time a few years ago when it was like a lot of like celebrity reality TV stars are getting all these tattoos, and then somebody was like, oh, if I don't like it, I'll just laser it off. And I remember seeing that on the front cover of a magazine, and I was just like, no, it's not a haircut, it's not a top, it's forever. And yeah, and also you said as well, like, I got them at first for like self-esteem, but obviously people get them as well to like to completely express themselves and like they just love them. But yeah, I would never tattoo anything on somebody that I didn't think would work for them. But I'm like, just like this, I'm just, you know. And I think because I have a particular style, 9 times out of 10 when people contact me, it's for something that's related to what I'm doing. So I very rarely have to say no. If anything, I have to encourage people to go a bit bigger because people want like really small things because they're scared. But then I'm like, you shouldn't do that. You should get something that you want to get for yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a boring tattoo conversation.
No, but that's true, because when I went to have, I've only got one, but it's quite big.
Yeah.
And when I went to get it done, I thought it was going to be smaller and also more detail, have more stuff going on. And the guy who did it, he's a guy called Tintin, or Tintin, he's a French guy.
Yeah.
And he got very, very stoned just when he was about to tattoo, which I didn't
I don't
let
do
faze
that.
Me. Thank you, yes. No, it was a slightly unusual tattoo. He said, if you do your design, people will just look at you and be like, what is that on her arm? You know, something big and bold and clear. And I think it was really good advice. And actually, on the way here, Claire is sitting quietly now. She said that if she's going to get a tattoo, she's going to get a money spider tattoo. And I was like, that's so small. People should be like, I think you've got something. You've got a smudge.
Well, I will do that for you.
Also, you've got to be honest, I think I've got the skills to get a money spider.
Just have it on your face. Just have it down there.
Six legs, right? End of your nose.
Oh, my God, that has to happen.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Is it true you can't tattoo normally above the neck and below the wrist? Like, is that like a legal thing? And
no, tattoo. Do you know what? I was on the Jeremy Vine show 2 years ago talking about tattoos, and there was this doctor on there as well. And I think she was there to kind of like be the other person to kind of say, I don't like tattoos. She definitely didn't like tattoos. And she was saying that it's illegal to get your face done and this. And I don't know where people have got that. Some countries I think it is, but here it's not. However, do not get your face and hands and visible tattoos until you are completely secure in your life and know what you're doing for work. And also, I would never do that on somebody that didn't have lots of other tattoos as well, because that's just... I'm like a mother for all of my clients. I'm like, no, you're not getting it there, no.
And what do you think about when people have got tattoos but they think their parents don't know, but they're maybe like grown-ups? Because I've got friends like that in their like mid-40s who are like, my mum and dad don't know. I'm like, I'm sure they know.
Oh, no, I have customers, like proper, like older than me customers that do that. Even some tattoo artists won't get visible tattoos out of respect for their family members.
I guess it can be it can stir up emotions in people. But I don't really understand. I mean, now, it's, as you say, it's so much more.
Oh, that's sensible. What I was going to say about your dad, actually, because obviously it's a generational thing as well. Like only in recent years are you seeing them everywhere. So I guess for him it was like, and it was for my dad originally as well. He was like, no.
Yeah.
No. But then, you know, it's changing. It's an art form. I definitely see it as an art form.
Oh, it is. And it's funny because you said earlier about your mum having tattoos, and I sort of forgot to think about the fact that the thing that always sowed the seed in me was actually my mum having one. When I was six or seven, she was a single mother with me for about 3 years. And she came home one day with a bit of cling film on her shoulder, and she'd had a hummingbird tattooed on her shoulder. And we had a bath together that night, and I remember how she was really excited about this tattoo. And I liked the sort of selfishness of it, really. Like, she did it just for herself, just because she was at this point in her life where she was single. She'd been with my dad since she was 16, so you know, it was quite significant that she was in this, you know, now on her own. And I think in my head I was like, right, as soon as I can, that's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah. Same for me. So my mum was actually the first person in the family to get a tattoo. She divorced our dad, and then she got a tribal heart tramp stamp.
Okay.
Actually, no, I don't like saying tramp stamp. It was just at the bottom of her back.
No, but that is a place like that. Slang of where you get them.
And it's just, it is hideous. And it's still there. And there's nothing I can do with it because it's so big and bold. So when I first started getting tattooed, she was like, oh, I don't like it. And I'm like, mother, you cannot say anything. You started this. But I love that though. Like, it was for her. Do you know what I mean? I think, you know, leaving a relationship that you've been in for so long and kind of losing yourself within that relationship.
Maybe there's a thing, yeah, like a bit of a, maybe there's a pattern then with women when they've got relationships going, right?
Piercing or tattoos.
Exactly. Yeah, but I think it's very cool. I think as well, Richard said a nice thing to me once about my tattoo, because he was saying, because I'm like, basically, like, places like Daily Mail cannot stand my tattoo. Like, if I've ever got a picture, you see it, they're just like, that's the most hideous thing I've ever seen in my life. And he said, you know, the thing about tattoos is it tells people that maybe they don't know everything about you. And I thought that's really, I like that, actually. There's a sort of secret story to it sometimes.
I really like that. That's gorgeous. Actually, the Daily Mail didn't like my tattoo of Stephen Fry. I don't know if you saw all that. So I have a tattoo of Stephen Fry on my, and I'll show you in a sec. And when was it? It was 2 years ago. I just did a tweet being like, can someone please tell Stephen Fry, at Stephen Fry, that I've had him tattooed on me for 5 years. He sees it, he retweets it. So I'm like, I remember I was cashing my money in the bank and I was like, and the woman was like, what's wrong? And I was like, Stephen Fry. She had no idea what was going on about. And then I was like, oh my gosh. And I like messaged my husband, like, Stephen Fry has recognised me. And he said something really sweet saying like, I will endeavour never to say anything bad to make you want you to remove it.
Aww.
But then like, Radio 1 got hold of it, and then like the Metro got hold of it, then the Sun got hold of it, and then the Daily Mail got hold of it. And the comment section under that was quite something. Which I just thought, you know what, I don't really care. But then from that, actually, I got to meet him live on the One Show, like 2 days later. It was a whirlwind 48 hours.
And now, you know, he has you tattooed on him now, in the same, you know, place.
He's actually on his face, has my face. Like, oh. No, he didn't offer that, actually. That's really rude of him. Maybe I'll tweet him again and see if I can get him to do that.
I didn't know you had Stephen Fry. Have you got any other notable people, or is it mainly more...
It's just Stephen. I love him so much. He's such a natural treasure. Well, I grew up with, like, do you remember Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he was always so good in that. And Blackadder Goes Forth, like, I love him.
Well, actually, and that brings full circle back to the mental health aspect, actually, cause, yes, because he works for Mind. He does loads of stuff for Mind, the charity. He's all about mental health. So that's actually a really nice person. It works on lots of levels.
Yeah.
Oh, and actually the Harry Potter thing, and you've made loads of Harry Potter Lego, I can see. And he does that too.
Yes.
Well, I listen to Stephen Fry.
Oh, don't they? Oh, maybe our paths will cross again.
Actually, and another Stephen Fry, like, my little brother Jackson once played his son in the film Wild.
Wow.
Yeah, I was very jealous about it at the time, because when I was growing up, I really wanted to act. And I kept saying to my mum, I want an agent. And she finally capitulated when I was at exactly the right age to be completely uncastable in most things.
Oh, my God.
I was very tall, sort of 13, 14-year-old. So I couldn't play cute little kid, and I couldn't play, like, the next level up. So Jack, who'd gone along to the casting with me for the agent, got taken on and then did loads of work.
Wow.
He had these little ringlets, and he was just constantly working. And he was about... So let me think. I think he must have been only about sort of 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And he was really cute. And yeah, he had to do lots of things where he's in period costume going, Mama or Papa. And then it's like, yeah, he ended up working with loads of people. It was all...
Were you happy? Were you secretly just like...
No, I was really annoying. No. Even now I got my mum's cost.
So happy for you. Yeah, brilliant. How much stuff did he do? That's brilliant.
Oh, tons. He
really?
Did, yeah, he did Wild with Stephen Fry. He did The Tenant of Wildfeld Hall with... Tara Fitzgerald. He did something called A Village Affair with Keira Knightley. He did another film with Christian Slater and Jared Leigh. He was just like constantly working.
Oh my God.
It's like constantly working.
So happy for you.
Yeah. That worked out well. Thanks, Mum. They're taking me seriously with the agent request. back to you, Rebecca. So the pub landlady thing, how unusual is it to be I don't know much about the world of... being a pub landlady, how unusual is it to be a pub landlady by the time you're in your mid-20s? I would have thought that's pretty young.
Really young. I don't know, it just felt so...
This is in Rotherham or...?
No, this was in Leeds. So okay. I was running live music at a venue in Sheffield, was actually where I met my husband. And then, because it was just really like, it was like, it would close at 5 a.m. sometimes, this bar. And it was a hotel and it was fun, but it was very party. And I was just getting a bit like, oh, I'm just, no more. And... this pub kind of became available in Leeds, and that's where my husband lived. So we moved there, and he was on tour all the time, and we had it for free. So at first it just seemed this like perfect opportunity, but it's really hard work. You know, you live there. I mean, open Christmas Day, like all of these things, you're on call all the time. But I think it's a really great job to do as well. Like, not everyone can do it. It's unsociable hours. It's not really great pay, and it's hard work. But I've got friends 20 years from working in the bar industry. It attracts a certain type of person. But yeah, it's not a common job. I mean, it might have changed now. God, it was like, how long has it been now? Like 10 years since I've done it. But it wasn't like common for a 24-year-old woman to be running a pub.
No, and do you sometimes have to be quite tough with getting people out on time and that kind of thing?
Was I tough? My husband would literally, because he'd drink at the bar sometimes, would just be like, do you hate everybody that comes through the door? But I have to be like, game face. And being tattooed... when stag parties would come in, and being pregnant and tattooed when stag parties would come in. Oh yeah, I had a bit of grit about me, yes.
And how did you find that, being pregnant in that situation?
Really, really awful, actually. I had just awful, awful stuff. I don't wear bras, I've never worn bras, and that was like I'd had like pint glasses thrown on my top so they could, really bad, lifted up top, reaching over the bar to touch my pregnant stomach and stuff. Yeah.
Oh.
So you have to have a little, well, not a little, you have to be a lot like...
What made you think this was an unsuitable environment?
I just don't know. No, don't get me wrong. Like, it was, and you know, it's stag parties. Stag parties would just be the worst, just the absolute worst.
Fearless.
Yeah, and
fearless
there'd always pack. Be like one guy at the end just being like, I'm so sorry. Like, it's like their friend from university that doesn't know the rest of the lot. It was just horrible, yeah. Yes, so it was fun, but it was hard.
And is there any skill set you think that you did take on from that into
tattooing? 100% people, just talking to anybody, talking to everybody. It's a really sociable, both of them are very sociable jobs. And in both of them you meet unusual characters as well.
And is it quite equal amount of male and female tattoo artists?
Oh, I'd say when I first started, there were not as many women, but now there are definitely more women. Definitely more women now.
Hmm.
In my circle, actually. Like, I think, yeah. Yeah.
And I was wondering as well, is there like a standard thing people say as like a joke thing when they find out that that's what you do for a living?
Oh, yes. So I'll go, I'm a tattooist. So I'm like, oh, you can't tell because I have lots of tattoos. And I have to go like, because I don't want to be rude because I think they're being lovely. But it's just, yeah. How many have you got? Oh, I had that this morning, actually. Literally this morning. I just lie every time because I don't know.
Like, just the one.
Yeah.
They've all joined up.
What do you mean? Oh, no.
Yeah. It's not real. It's a bodysuit.
It's a birthmark. What are you about?
And did you always want to have kids? Did you always picture yourself?
No. I never wanted kids. Oh, this is going to turn into a love story. And then I met my husband, and within 3 months we were living together. And then 2 months after that, we were trying for a baby. And this is when we knew Dom as well. So yeah, it was. And then when we got pregnant, all of our friends were like, "What are you?
So you'd only been going out for like 6 months when you were telling people you're having a baby."
We tried for a little bit, yeah. So maybe it was a bit long. No, God, yeah, no, it's 6 months. Yeah, it was. But obviously it's, you know, worked out perfectly. I mean, I don't recommend young couples to do that. Just to see if it works, because that's so stupid. But it did work. It was brilliant.
Well, it's actually not dissimilar to me and my husband. Really? Except that you actually, you know, made the decision. No.
It wasn't a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I've actually got quite a lot of examples of that working out pretty well.
Brilliant.
My mum and my stepdad as well. They'd only been together for 3 months when they found out they're having my brother.
I think when you know, I know it's such a cliche thing to say, but it's so true. Like, and what's so awesome is that it feels like it's always been the three of us.
Yeah.
Because Lee and I were together for such a short time before they came. Now it's like, it's just the three of us. And both my husband and I come from broken homes. So we were having this conversation with Bea the other day, and we were saying, like, because I'll always be having a little kiss and a little cuddle, and they'll be like, oh, for God's sake. And I'm like, no, like, honestly, trust me, this is much better than the other thing of like not seeing that. But it's a brand new experience for my husband and I as well, because we didn't grow up in, you know, a together unit.
Mm.
And so we are, and so, you know, we're all in it like, it's great, isn't it? I mean, it's new for all three of us.
Yeah, well, like that resonates with me as well. My parents separated when I was 4, so I didn't have that unit for a lot of my childhood.
Mm.
And I do think there's lots about how I raised my kids that's very similar to my childhood,
mm-hmm.
but that is one massively different factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, loads of siblings for them and, you know, mum and dad together.
Are you an only child?
I'm an only child from my mum and dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then my brother was born when I was 8.
Okay.
And oh, same, like you with your sister, yeah, yeah. I was absolutely obsessed with him. Like, obsessed.
Yes. It's that perfect age gap, isn't it? Because they're not a threat to you. They're not like you're not stealing mum and dad's attention, and you can be totally there.
Exactly. Oh, and also you're the big sister. And yeah. So it's just the two of you, just you and your sister.
Yeah, yeah.
And also it means you've got like a baby on the hip from the age of about
100%. 10. And really interesting, because Hannah was 17 when Bea was born. So they kind of Hannah started being with B, how I was with Hannah, and it was like amazing. But like, because our mum and dad were together a long time when they shouldn't have been, when they were going through the divorce, I'd be like, I'm taking younger than my child is now, I would take Hannah to like Download Festival just for the weekend, and they'd be like, right, see you later. I was 18, like, who the heck? Like, but it was wonderful, do you know what I mean? And like, and when I would like DJ and put bands on, I'd get Hannah to come with me and stuff, and she'd be like, oh, you're so cool. And now she's just far cooler than me. Far cooler than me now.
Well, the baton has to be passed on at some
point. I know, but it's just like, oh, damn.
But it's funny that it seemed to result in a similar thing of you kind of just getting on with things, and, you know, it sounds like, you know, you already had the responsibility of a job and being independent and all that.
Yeah.
Sooner than maybe some other people and are, I don't know, different generations.
Exactly,
as well.
And I don't know if that's necessarily a positive thing as well, because, you know, there's a lot of trauma that comes with being in a family that's quite dysfunctional, as I'm sure many people know. And I think my sister and I talk about every time we have a conversation, it always comes back to this. It's quite interesting, actually, because it's just something we really feel passionate about, like how actually I had to grow up quite quickly, really quickly, So our dad was an alcoholic, and it was you know, well, it wasn't fine, but it was just something that I would kind of be very aware. I didn't want Hannah to kind of be around it, so I would just kind of take that role on straight away. But, you know, it's kind of turned me into a very determined woman today. And my child will never, you know, experience that.
Yeah, yeah.
So everything's a lesson. I bumped into somebody I knew on the street today, and we were talking about this, like, kind of like the traumas of like your own childhood and how you can just take that and turn it into a positive, because you just, your kids will never experience that.
And what is it about your mum, do you think, that's made you and your sister so creative?
So my mum is a painter as well. I don't know. It's really interesting.
So she's an artist?
Well, amateur. Do you know what I mean? Like, she would just, she went back to, after Hannah was born, she went to university and did a degree, and we were just around that. It's never something that we all had a conversation about. It's just something that's happened, like, naturally.
Mm. Well, it's nice that all of, you know, you and your sister have managed to actually turn it into what you do for a living.
Yeah,
as well,
oh, so lucky. No, so lucky, so privileged to be able to kind of have that as an option as well.
And you mentioned that you don't think Bea's going to get any tattoos at all.
No, no, we kind of said, like, for the longest time they were like, yes, loads, and now they're like, no, not at all.
And for the eagle-eared, you have been using they, their pronouns, because yes. Bea, only a few weeks ago,
yes,
said that they're non-binary.
Absolutely. I asked their permission if we could speak about this as well, and they were like, absolutely. The more people that know about these things, they're just brilliant. You know, my husband and I learn from them every day. I get really emotional when I speak about my child, so I'm going to... yeah, they're brilliant. They're brilliant.
Well,
they're
actually, brilliant. No, I think it's a really emotional thing, because how old is Bea?
They're going to be 11 in 2 months, so they're 10.
Which is still very young, but what amazingly... emotionally mature person to be able to say, I think it's really good to have this conversation out there. And it sounds like growing up, Bea's always been pretty good at articulating how they're feeling. And...
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's really great. And I'm seeing this in that generation, especially being allowed to express themselves without, you know, no, you shouldn't really do that. You shouldn't really do that. And I think it's just wonderful. It's kind of, it's so authentic that they can actually kind of explore who they are. And you know, and I think it's just a pleasure to see.
Yeah, I think it's amazing too, and my kids inspire me a lot too, because they're so matter of fact about exploring all the spectrum of gender. It's like literally not done in any way for effect or like a learned thing. It's just part of their way of relating to each other.
Yeah.
And it made me think a lot about, it wasn't a conversation that I felt was on the table when I was growing up.
No.
There was lots of talk about whether or not you were... Even actually being a feminist was kind of still a bit of a word that people hadn't really decided whether or not they wanted to be, even if they wanted equality, which looking back is really... I mean, it's not that long ago.
No, it's not that. I was about to say it's not that long ago, but so similar to myself as well, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary,
isn't it?
It's
like a dirty word, wasn't it?
It was.
So bizarre.
I remember probably when I was in my 20s, my mum was working with... I can't remember which charity it was now, but she had these T-shirts we'd been given that said, this is what a feminist looked like. And we both put them on and had a picture taken. And I remember thinking, if I post this somewhere, is that kind of like slightly like a militant? Yeah, exactly. Wow. But now, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, nobody would even question that. And I think as well, there's a lot of people that from our generation, they're actually quite traditional, close to home in a way that they might not realise, just because a lot of how society is structured is very binary. Mm-hmm. And I'm...
Oh, my gosh.
This is a cause very close to my heart, because not just because I have 5 kids who are all boys, but because when I had my first baby, and he happened to be a boy, I was really shocked at how many things were presumed just because people knew that fact. Mm-hmm. And that really made my mind like, well, no, I'm determined that, you know, he can choose whatever it is, however he wants to interpret it.
Yeah.
And I have some really good conversations with him, because some of his friends, he's got a friend that's transitioning at the moment. Mm-hmm. So biological boy transitioning to girl. And I was like, well, the thing is, Sunny, I want you as a boy to be able to interpret that however it works for you. Mm-hmm. So why, if your friend, is it important that that's now... Why can they not just be a very feminine boy? Why does it have to be something else? And he was so like measured, and he said, well... That is an option, and that is how some people are, but that doesn't work for them. And it was just so like...
Of course, yeah.
And I just thought that was really wise.
Yeah.
And I thought, God, I have to remember these things to pass on to people.
Because they've been allowed to grow, you know, they've had an environment where they can just, you know... Because gender's such a... Like, it's such a these like sexuality and gender, it's such man-made constructs, like you're this, or you're this. And it's just so ridiculous. So our children are just like, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's so awesome that we can learn from our own children as well. And, you know, literally yesterday morning, the three of us were sat here having breakfast and we were talking about, because I told them that we were going to have a conversation, is it, would it be okay? And like Lee and I were saying, like, this is so great, because when we were growing up, just from my personal experience, I had never heard the term non-binary, you know, and that wasn't even a concept. But obviously thinking about it makes perfect sense. And we have friends in our lives that are non-binary and trans, and they are the most wonderfully brave, awesome people. But obviously, sometimes they grew up in environments where that wasn't accepted. So it's only a recent thing that they feel comfortable coming forward and saying. Whereas I hope that as the generations go on, that people can kind of come to that conclusion of them, know who they are straight away and feel safe to kind of express themselves in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it is shifting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought when Sam Smith came out as non-binary, it was really, really impactful thing to do and really brave.
So
and a lot of people were quite dismissive of it. But
media, yeah.
I thought it was absurd, really, because I think, unless, how can you know how it would feel to be, like, you know, this massive multi-million selling, you know, album selling artist, and then put yourself out there knowing that's going to be, for some people, something they just really struggle to understand. Like, that's not a conversation you had to have.
No.
They could have just kept it on as a quiet thing or whatever.
Totally, but think of what that's done to people seeing somebody with that kind of status come out and say that about themselves and be proud about themselves. Like, I think it's so wonderful that they did that. So wonderful that they did that. But for me, and I'm sure you're the same as well, I just don't understand why people have such an issue with it. It does not affect them at all. And, you know, there's people that say, oh, you know, they're jumping on the bandwagon or whatever. And it's like, do you not see the struggle? You know, like black trans women, their life expectancy is something like 35 in America. Like, it's, the statistics are so, so awful. So to say that people are like jumping on the bandwagon and stuff, I find it so incredibly offensive and so incredibly, you know, just awful to say.
Yeah.
And it doesn't affect that person's life at all in any way. Well,
yeah, I know. You're very much preaching to the converted here, because this is something I understand the importance of having open debates and conversation, and I'm all for, you know, sitting down with people who think differently to you and, you know, having the chat and trying to, you know, share each other's, you know, get involved in people's point of view. But when it comes to things like the trans debate or non-binary things, as you say, I don't think I've ever had someone say their argument and it comes from a personal experience, which I find really bizarre, but also incredibly indulgent, because it means you've allowed yourself this space to sort of intellectualise the debate, but you're not actually sitting down with someone and saying, can you tell me how it is from your point of view?
Yeah.
So you're not actually trying to get that proximity.
No.
And when you've finished having your intellectual debate about it, you're able to walk away from that conversation and live your life that doesn't have any interaction with it.
Yeah.
Whereas for those people, as you say, the life expectancy or just how that person might feel,
internalized
or how
trauma.
Safe. You've left them a little bit high and dry, really, because they're already vulnerable.
Yeah.
So I do struggle with that hugely. I can't get into that mindset. I don't understand it.
No.
But I do think having conversations is vital.
Totally. Absolutely. And, you know, I said to you earlier about my mum and telling her about that. And she, bless her, she was brilliant. And she phoned me separately because we have a family WhatsApp group and B is part of that. And then separately she was like, right, okay, they, them. And she was like, I'm really worried that I'm going to mess up. And I was like, B won't care if you mess up and correct yourself. They'll see that you're trying. And I said, also, it's not about you. Like, oh, I'm really worried if I'm going to, you know, it's about them. So, you know, it's just, as long as we're listening and as long as we're having these conversations and we're including that community within these conversations as well, they should be leading we should be creating safe spaces for them. I hope that it can change. We're never, obviously, not everybody's going to be okay with it, because that's just, there are idiots out there.
I know. And people feel threatened by things and they don't necessarily want to push on the bit that hurts and understand where that comes from.
I know. Well, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I noticed from, you know, like in childhood stuff, you know, in terms of, I know there are companies that do unisex clothing a lot, but there's loads of stuff that's become very very boy girl, very, very binary. And I think it's a knee-jerk reaction to the fact that we're actually better at having the conversation about sexuality and gender in grown-ups.
Mm.
But there's still this weird fear that if you introduce having that conversation when they're small, you're somehow going to encourage something and bring it out of someone in a kind of, you know what, just because you dressed me this way, I'm now actually more likely to live my life differently.
Which is so ridiculous.
It's so silly.
I saw an amazing tweet and I can't for the life of me remember who said it. And this one was just like, everything is sexualized anyway. Like, you know, your family portrait at work, which is a heterosexual couple with your children, that's heterosexuality there.
Mm.
You know, that's fine. Why is that deemed as fine? But yet, you know, you see a, you know, on adverts or whatever, a gay couple proposing or whatever. Why is that the like, oh my gosh, or you're saying about the clothing and stuff. It's like, you know, that's so ridiculous. Even having binary clothing is you know, that sexuality. You know, boys will be boys and girls will be girls and it's all glitter or it's a football and it's just so infuriating.
It is.
It's so infuriating and so just pointless as well.
It is. It is. But like, that's why I think it must just come from some weird fear that you're going to sort of cause some sort of chaos if people are allowed to think about themselves. But I think, you know, I've had really interesting conversations with some of my girlfriends where they've said that sometimes they've realised that their issue with it is all about not really knowing how they feel about themselves as a woman. And what does, are they feminine? Do they fit that? And that's, you know, that's something that's obviously that should be addressed for them. That's a really important personal thing.
Definitely.
But it does sound like B is a particularly precocious child because that's an unusual level of self-awareness to have at 10.
Yes, but also I wonder if it's because they are an only child and they have just been with Lee and I, you know, for all their lives, and we very much include them in everything, and we have conversations with them and we talk to them, you know, we include them in our conversations. I don't know. They're brilliant. Like, I wish, you know, you could meet them. They are just great. They're great. And interestingly enough, the way they dress is very femme. So they love skirts and they love like pastel colours and stuff. But that doesn't define their gender, which I love that about them, because that's very like, cool. Yeah, brilliant. You know,
well, that's actually sort of what it should really be about, isn't it? Like, you can have it's choice.
Definitely.
And even if, you know, they go about their later on down the line, it becomes apparent that actually they do want to, you know, evolve into something. Mm-hmm. The next step. This has all been part of a journey.
Absolutely.
And what a brilliant way to have a childhood where you can actually have these chats and everybody just kind of goes, okay, you know, let's explore that with you.
A few people have said to Lee and I, like, oh my gosh, you're such amazing parents and stuff. But actually for us, it's just like, it's just so natural. Like, I don't understand why that just wouldn't be the natural reaction to a child that you love saying that to you.
Well, I think that kind of goes back as well with, you know, with how it is for people when they do grow up in a family where they do say, I'm gay, or this is, you know, I'm whatever it may be, and then they're not met with support and love. Like, that's a very confusing idea, isn't it? That you'd put that prejudice in the way of your relationship. But, you know, people are wired complicated in a complicated way, and there's all sorts of things about how they were raised and how they were allowed to express themselves. And, you know, it's just, sometimes we're very simple and sometimes we're really complicated.
Oh, 100%. Nothing's black and white, and everything has a nuance to it as well.
Exactly. And how's it gone down at school? How's the school been? I suppose they've only just gone back.
They've gone back today, but obviously WhatsApp groups. I'm sure you're in parent WhatsApp groups as well.
Love them very much.
Do you know what? I am so lucky with our one. I am so lucky. Like, our class have just been brilliant. I hear nightmares from other people. But yeah, I said it in the group. Bea told their friends anyway. And some of the parents have just been absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
Just like sending messages straight away. Just been like, oh, we've let our kid know about Bea and stuff. And how do they want to be addressed? Which has just been wonderful.
That's really good.
Really great.
And for their friends, presumably, they won't really think too much about it.
They don't care.
No.
This is the thing. It's never the children. It's the adults.
Mm.
But because, you know, secondary school next year, we're going to speak to the school separately. But I'm sure that that's something that they've come across, you know, already. I mean, I'm sure they'll be transitioning children within their school.
Yeah, and I don't know if you filled in your census thing, but I was quite...
I'm about to do that today.
Yeah, well, I saw on that, actually, when your child is over 16, there's actually... It's voluntary if you fill it in, but they say... You know, how is the gender your child identifies with the same as they were assigned at birth? And they ask about if they're, you know, there's sexuality and stuff, which I think as an overview of where the UK is at, it's actually really, I thought it was really cool they actually put that in there. That shows that it's, you know, properly part of mainstream conversation. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, wow, I didn't notice. That's great. I'll have a look at that later.
Yeah, well, will you thank B for me?
I will do.
For letting us chat about it. Because I do think it's brilliant. And I think, I'm not too worried about a lot of that generation, really, in that way. I think they are, as you say, sort of teaching us a lot of things.
So much. And what a time for them to be existing in at the moment. I was listening to my friend do a talk yesterday, and she was saying she really hates that they're like the COVID generation or whatever, or like the forgotten generation. And she was like, they should be called the remarkable generation, because they have the resilience that they've kind of had and gained through this. It's been so hard, particularly for children and young adults, teenagers and children.
Mm.
And they have just, they're so great and they're so strong. And I think, especially with everything last year, BLM, climate change, American elections, which are just everywhere. There's so much around, like so much. And I think they've taken it in their stride, and I'm just really, really proud of them, you know?
Yeah.
I'm really proud of that generation.
No, you're right, actually, because also they've had to look up at their parents' faces a lot and see us kind of looking a bit like, not actually really sure what to do with that information.
Which must
and
have
having
been
open conversations
terrifying.
About it. Yeah, really scary.
Terrifying for them, because that's what I remember B saying to us, that they were really scared, and like Lee and I were like, yeah, you know, so are we.
But we had an extra freezer.
You had to mention the extra. I bought an extra freezer. So lockdown, first lockdown came on, and I said to my husband, we need an extra freezer. And, you know, it's just taking up space. I'm glad it's now on the podcast.
I like how you put a plant on it.
I did adjust it up yesterday. I was like, do I put a cloth over it? I don't.
It's really pretty. I'm going to get one now.
I'll give you the link. I'll send you the link.
It has been a bit of a discombobulating time, to say the least, really, because it's just, yeah, that uncertainty and looking, seeing lots of parents looking perplexed and being at school. But yeah, there's definitely some benefits to having had that time with them, extra time with them, having chats about the fact that, you know, even when we're not in control, there's still, you can still make a plan and move forward.
But I think that comes from privilege as well. I think that's something that I've definitely recognised this last year. Like, you know, like just joking about buying the extra freezer, I was able to do that.
Yeah.
Having good Wi-Fi for their online learning, having, you know, a tablet or a laptop.
Yeah.
And that's something that's been quite hard, not hard, but very hard, but also something we should recognise, is the kind of seeing actually the kind of gap between rich and poor, and like kids that are just kind of being left behind, and that's another thing. And like talking with B about that as well, not, you know, not making them feel bad, but we have to recognize that, like, we've been really lucky. We have a safe, you know, we all get on, there's a safe space for them here as well. So
no, you're absolutely right, that's a really important thing, and there'll be lots of kids where they haven't had that experience.
No, and that's something that needs, oh god, it breaks my heart.
No, I know. There's definitely going to be lots of cracks that will have come out of the last year that will need to be addressed. That is heartbreaking. But to sort of end on a slightly lighter note, with tattooing, how often do you see tattoos that are really terrible and think, oh my god, that's... Because have you ever Googled like bad tattoo, like those photo montages? I love them.
Well, there's a lot of Instagram accounts as well. I do not judge, because when I there are some corkers of mine walking around out there when I first started tattooing. We know we all have to start somewhere.
And what happens when you're doing it and you're thinking, that's gone a bit wrong?
You add a leaf. You add an extra leaf on there. Just, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to add a leaf, because I think it really flows with your body. And if any of my customers are listening to that now, I'm thinking, she said that to me. I speak about this, because these are like questions that get asked a lot as well from people when they're getting tattooed.
Well, it's a pressure, isn't it?
It is. Do you know what though? It's not anymore. But I remember when I first started tattooing, I remember thinking, like, my first boss, Mick Miller, said to me, he was like, when he first started tattooing, he would just hope the customers didn't turn up. And I totally got that, because you're so nervous, you're just like, oh my gosh. But now if they don't turn up, I'm like, where are you? Where it's become quite natural. But I don't mess up tattoos, actually. I don't know what you're talking about.
You have to be pretty confident to be able to do that though.
Oh my gosh. Because I'm dyslexic as well, so I don't do any script or anything like that, because no. Or faces, I won't. Well, I do sometimes, I do, but like, there are so many amazing portrait art. Just do your research. That's what I'll say
do
to
your
people.
Research.
Do your research. Social media is such a wonderful, accidental, amazing platform for, like, Instagram has been great for like tattooists, because it's like online portfolios, and like, just do your research. It's forever.
Even if it's really simple, I would say, still get someone really good.
Well, simple tattoos are actually really difficult to do because they've got to be really clean and perfect. Mm. So do your research.
I think that's wise advice. Are your tattoos all from different people?
Yes, yes. So loads of different people. And I know like they're really colourful, my ones. A lot of people say that, like, oh, you don't actually have...
I love them.
...your style on you.
But I love your bird.
Thank you. If I was to start again...
Yeah.
No, do you know what? No, because I don't... All of these... I remember... They're just really great memories. There is my husband's name on my hand that...
I saw he had your name on his hand too.
My... He... Right, okay. This... Do... Okay, please don't do this at home. So we got... When we got married, we got gifted this bottle of Laphroaig whiskey that we just... Oh, it smells weird. I don't want to drink it. Oh my God.
That's my husband's favourite whiskey.
I love it now. We absolutely love it. But we drank a bottle of it. And then... This is before I was a tattoo artist as well. And... Just, oh my gosh, sorry to any tattooers listening to this. With like a needle and ink, just he tattooed his name on my hand, and I had no other tattoos around there. Let at the see. Time there it is.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, it's really, you know. And then we were going for it here as well, but it hurt too much, so I stopped. But now I have his name on me properly done. So
I wonder how many people have bought, you know, you can buy like a home tattoo kit really easily on Amazon.
It terrifies me, that stuff, because this is the thing as well, because sometimes people message me like, I've got this kit that I've bought, and I'm like, no, because risk of infection. There's a reason why there's studios like council. I'm going to get into like jargon now, but councils pick up, you know, your clinical waste, like where are those needles going? Please don't tattoo yourself at home. Even though I just said I did it, and I would, no, it's such, no, don't do it.
Not even a little money spider for a friend.
Well, I mean, you know.
Oh, thanks so much for letting me talk to you. And actually, your tattoos are genuinely beautiful. So if I ever did have it, that's why I started following you as well, because I was toying with the idea of having another one here.
Well, I will always, and my door
look
always
all that virgin flesh.
Well, I know there's both of you actually. I'm like, okay, I've mapped out your entire bodies already.
She's locked the door.
Lee, get the machine.
How lovely was that chat? How lovely is Rebecca's voice? So comforting. And thank you to her for her time. Thank you to her husband, Lee, for going out for the morning while we were there recording. How sweet is that? I don't actually mind a bit of background noise, but I thought it was adorable that he sort of skipped off to give us some space. And how lovely of their 10-year-old to agree to letting their mum speak so candidly about the decisions they're making. And it was just so nice to be in that environment where you can see and feel so much love and support that they have there. And I think, you know, it's really important for all of us to know that if we know someone or love someone who's decided to be non-binary, they anticipate us screwing up a little with the pronouns. That's actually a very small thing if the support and the love is there, isn't it? You know, these are hardwired into how we've known that person for a long time. So mistakes are going to happen. But if the intention is good, then all is good. And I could really feel that with Rebecca and how she spoke about it. I thought that was really important for us all to remember. And also, should I get another tattoo? It made me so tempted. Rebecca would do something so beautiful. I just know it. And that's why I ended up following her in the first place, toying with this idea. I think it's because I went very big with my first tattoo. It's quite big and prominent. I feel like if I got another tattoo, I'd be a tattooed person. As it is, I'm a person with a tattoo. Do you have any tattoos? It's not always who you expect, is it? In my family, I have one very tattooed sibling on my dad's side. I'm not sure my dad knows about how many tattoos they have. I think he probably does know, but it's just choosing not to acknowledge it. My dad never liked a tattoo. He made it very easy for me to rebel. I think it's quite fun. I can still remember his face when I showed him mine. I mean, obviously it's a heart that says family, so he couldn't get too cross, but yeah, he definitely wasn't thrilled. And then my mum has a tattoo. And then apart from that, it's just, yeah, us. I always thought my brother and my sister would get some, but oh, actually my sister has the world's smallest tattoo. She has a tiny little star on her wrist. I was with her when she got it done, and my brother and I took her along to this tattoo parlour, and she sort of disappeared behind a curtain because we weren't allowed to be there when she was having it done. And she came out probably about 5 minutes later, all tattooed, in a tiny tattoo. It's a very beautiful tattoo, but it is not big like mine. I think, yeah, Martha's kind of the size A. My mum is like size B, like moderate, and then I've gone pretty big. Anyway, we are nearing the end of series 3. I've got another 2 in the bag for you. Thank you so much for all my guests, but mainly thank you to you. What a lovely community we have here. I'm sure I've told you before, but I do so enjoy making these podcasts for you and hearing people's stories and thinking of new guests. And there's still so many stories out there to be heard. And I love reading your comments and your messages. And if you've posted with one of the reviews on the podcast apps, then I read all of them. And they're so beautiful. Thank you so much. It really does keep me feeling really excited about what else is out there. Because, you know, I think hearing from people is everything, really. It kind of makes you feel good and makes you feel like you're part of a community, and that is something that's really precious. So thank you very much. Please keep the suggestions coming as well. Thank you as well. I probably should thank them every week, but I don't because I'm rubbish. But thank you to Richard for always editing the podcast, even though that was not the hat he expected to wear for the last year. And thank you to my amazing producer Claire Jones, who has been so enthusiastic from the get-go about everything we're doing together. And, you know, more to come. I've got a lovely long list of people who've already agreed to speak to me for the next series. And how lucky am I? And what a nice thing that we just get to have these lovely conversations. I think I'm feeling particularly sentimental because I'm still speaking to you from a very quiet big bed in Manchester, miles away from the chaos of my family, where I can just, you know, miss them in that nice, cozy, comforting way. And don't worry, I will be nice and knackered this time tomorrow. My voice will sound less rested and you'll be the old, slightly more frayed, less rambly me that you know and love. Well, she's still a little bit rambly, but not quite as bad. Anyway, I will not trail who's coming up next week because I'll probably get it wrong. Thank you very much for listening as ever. See you next week. And wherever you are, I hope you have a really good night's sleep tonight because, wow, what a difference it makes. I'm enjoying it. I'm savouring it. See you soon. Lots of love.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.